This is the story of Maiden Palestine. It is a story of courage and pride. It's a story of human rights abuses and methodical dehumanization. The story of living in the experience of art as an essential means of conveying culture, heritage, and the very freedom of soul and spirit belonging to an honorable and ancient people. Made in Palestine proves the importance of art. It can be as vital as food and water in sustaining a people in crisis. لأن دايما الطفراني بالقوة معاها ميزانية كفت الأشرة شبابيك وقفولي المدارس عين على المدارس بعز الشتاء والسقع قاعدين بالصف والشبابيك زي اللي قلت كوارس. Made in Palestine is an art exhibit that shows through October at the Art Car Museum Station at 1502 Alabama Street at La Branch here in Houston. It is a groundbreaking show of international importance because it is the first museum exhibition in the United States or Europe devoted to the contemporary art of Palestine. The following is an interview with seven of the artists: Samia Halabi, Vera Tamari, John Halaika, Suleiman Mansour, Raji Cook, Tasir Baraka, and Mary Tuma. Before we get to their lived art experience, we start with the story of how it came together from the curators, James Herathus, Gabriel Delgado, and Tex Kirshen. They stopped by the KPFT studio May 3rd, a day after the opening.
We very quickly found out that there had never been a Palestinian show. Whereas the Israelis had astronauts on the move, and the Israeli National Orchestra comes here, and Israeli artists are shown fairly frequently in New York and other places, there really never had been a serious Palestinian show, not only here, but also in Europe. So we felt that, you know, it was time to organize one. And
a strictly Palestinian.
A strictly Palestinian show. There'd been several shows where there were Israeli artists and Palestinian artists, but never strictly Palestinian shows.
Like Jim was saying, just getting on the internet and sort of searching and making network searches on different Palestinian artists and everything, and figuring out who is who, really, and just following leads and doing individual searches by artist names, and then figuring out where they were showing and who was showing them, and then making contacts with those galleries and different things, whether it be in Palestine or in New York.
Or Japan,
yeah. And first off, there wasn't a lot of feedback because here is this person coming out of the middle of nowhere asking for artwork by these political Palestinian artists, and they were sort of taken back and they didn't think it was legit. And so we had to not really prove ourselves, but just let them know that we were for real and that we were 100% behind their cause, and that we felt that it was the right time to put on a show of this magnitude.
Curators took to the road to seek art, and in their travels to Palestine, they discovered their own common experience of terror in living through art. This is some of their discourse.
Traveling into the border point on different buses, and because the last international bus had already left that day, and the four of us were the only internationals, we were able to climb onto the Arab bus to ride in.
After paying a fee, actually.
We had to pay a fee, yeah, because we were risking getting them in trouble. We were risking their well-being by doing so, because it's, you know, the segregation begins before you even get into the country, and the apartheid begins long before you step foot, you know, in the country. And as we traveled in, and this is the country of Israel, not the country of Palestine, which if you can stand the militarized checkpoints, everybody's welcome in, as Mira S. And other, you know, pro-peace journalists have always attested. They can step in, and they're not going to get, you know, besieged with a slew of 17-year-old men and machine guns, you know, waving them at their heads. But if you try and go to Israel from any surrounding country, you know, the apartheid begins immediately. And as we walked in, a young soldier, probably in his late teens, you know, doubtfully older than 20, 21 years old, pierced eyebrows. He looked like he was going, you know, he's the kind of kid you see here at a rave or a techno bar. But he's brandishing, he's a small, slight young man, brandishing a machine gun that's almost as big as he is, and he marches up to Gabriel and I immediately as we step off the bus and begins screaming at us in English to follow him. And I was mortified because my first thought was that we were going to be given some kind of international treatment, or we were whisked away from having to see the reality of Palestinian migration or immigration or, I don't know, induction. I don't know what they call it. I don't know what it should be called. Something ugly. But as he marched us over to a corner, he backs us up against the wall and has his machine gun in front of him, you know, the typical kind of bravado of a teenager that's overarmed and undertaught, and starts screaming, "Are you tourists or terrorists?" And Gabe answers very calmly, says, "We're museum curators. We're here to look at art and to see the country." He says, "No, you're terrorists." And from then, 4.5-hour ordeal plays out in which we're accused of being, I think, Al-Qaeda at some point. They strip search us, they march us around, they give us no information, and it's this long passage, you know, through, like, I guess, treatment that they use to screen out peace activists, because they do not want anti-international witnesses in anywhere near the countries, particularly not near Palestine. And at the end of which, we got through fine, obviously.
We were in a refugee village. One wall, very close to the artist that we went to visit, was just stained in blood. And it was the poor woman's six children been hit by a Cobra helicopter, because they'd heard the noise outside of the helicopter. They'd run out of the house, and they were hit by a rocket, and all killed, and the blood was still on the wall.
Well, it was still on the wall, and they were trying to clean it when we were there.
They were trying to clean it up when we were there, and it was, you know, you saw it. But that refugee camp had been attacked at 3 o'clock in the morning, several days earlier, by 75 full-blown Merkava tanks. 75 tanks coming into a situation where people do not have anything to defend themselves. They have a few Kalashnikov rifles, and they have rocks. And it's just a horrible thing. I was shocked by it. I can't believe that we're in any way involved in that, or that my tax dollars go for something like that. I just can't believe it, and I'm furious about it.
Living amid the distortions, absurdities, and terror of a brutal occupation, as it turns out, is the lived experience that will inform the Made in Palestine show. Each of the artists had their own confrontations with the Israeli police state that tried to shut down the unconquerable spirit of the Palestinian people. It is a spirit in crisis, but through it all, the voice's survival is relentless. olive tree, as artist Vera Tamara explains, symbolizes this Palestinian spirit.
Poignant issues. I mean, the destruction of an olive tree for a Palestinian is a destruction of a soul, because an olive tree is so deeply rooted in the land, and it stays for thousands of years, so it's inherited by all generations. So when you come and uproot an olive tree, you're uprooting your past in a sense. Very sad to see. It's like you're killing a person. Because there's the seasonal activity of picking the olives that Palestine is known to be for its olives and olive trees and olive oil. And people live by that harvesting the olives every year. And it's a process and involves the family and the neighbors and everybody in the community. And people have felt the uprootment of the olive trees first as a sign, as a punishment to people, Palestinians in general, and as to take up the land and confiscate the land that was where the olive fields were. So there is very many things have affected the daily life of Palestinians. I mean, even Palestinians who were not particularly involved in any open political activity. Everyday simple Palestinians have been affected in many ways. The destruction of their homes, the shelling, people being imprisoned. In my own neighborhood, I saw my neighbor being killed in front of my own eyes by Israeli special forces, Israeli force, just in blatant cruelty, you know. I saw a woman that was killed from that settlement I mentioned earlier, at the doorway of my house. She just dropped dead there. And it's very, people who are coming back, she was coming back with her husband from shopping for a feast day. They were preparing for the Ramadan.
An Israeli settler died?
A Palestinian woman coming back from town.
They shot her from Sagot?
Sagot. She was shot down at the entrance of the house where she died on the spot.
Yeah. Sagot is known as one of the occupied by some of the most brutal people I know. They kidnapped young children and tortured them. And early, we had news of that.
Yeah.
And they shoot. They're known to have shot. They constantly shoot at Palestinians.
Each artist, it seems, has their own lived experience of occupation and terror. So much so, it's a part of the daily fabric of Palestinian life. Resilience under oppression, fed by hope, is a near ubiquitous quality to all the artists.
Figures in the foreground are very large, oversized figures, and they're all stripped naked. They're all had their sort of ethnic identity removed. They've had their history removed. They have nothing on them but their memories. And it's an image that is an homage to the displacement of the Palestinians, the continuous displacement of the Palestinians over the last 55 years by Israeli occupiers. But it's not really limited to or exclusive to that. And I wanted the figures to speak in a universal voice about all of displaced people, whether it's Native Americans, whether it's the history of displaced Jews, whether it's Bosnians. I wanted to reference that notion of the continuous cycle of oppressed and oppressors. And I wanted to leave room on that particular piece for the viewer to project her or his own history and responsibility, whether it's a history of being part of the oppressed people or part of the oppressor group, or maybe even both. So in that sense, I wanted to make the figures anonymous so that the viewer can fill them with his identity, so to speak. The actual drawing with rubber stamps, and I should probably explain that because it's a visual image. The stamps actually were used to model the figure. So instead of working with chalk or ink or pencils, I actually used the words, you know,
relatively small size stamps to kind of draw the figure and model and give it mass and volume. It's a very dense image in that sense. There's lots and lots and lots of layers of marks on there. But in another way, the stamps serve as a reference to this notion of displaced folks being present yet forgotten, being a concern, but a concern that is quite often overlooked, and that repetition, that endless repetition of the two words, forgotten survivors, kind of attempts to bring that to mind. The fact that they're constantly there, but just like a word that's repeated over and over and over, it loses its meaning for most of us. There's this quality that I hope that the image evokes, and it's that the figures are not completely solid, that there's a real sense of volume, but they're also either disintegrating or coming into being. There's a sense of flux in that notion of it being made up of these broken marks. And to me, that notion of flux, that reference to flux, was really important because a refugee's life is all in a state of flux. The only thing they carry with them is their memory. And if they're lucky, just a few items of essential shelter. But there's constant change, there's constant unknown. There's this vast expanse of mystery and fear in front of them. And that is true to the Palestinians that were displaced in 48, that were displaced in 58, 67, in the 70s, and continue to be displaced currently in Palestine by having their homes blown up by the Israeli forces, which happens on a daily basis by the dozen homes that are destroyed. You see it again in these remarkable images, remarkably disturbing images of obscene destruction, homes bulldozed, and then a clearing of tents.
My art in general is about identity issues, and the work that I've been doing on the Middle East has to do with the women of the Middle East, particularly of Palestine. The piece that I have in the exhibit now here in Houston is a series of dresses that are all connected, made from one piece of cloth that is continuous, and they fold up and are sewn into five tall black dresses that reflect the traditional dress of the Palestinian woman. Palestinian embroidery has become iconic and addressing issues of identity for the Palestinian people. You find it now on all different kinds of products throughout Jerusalem, including things like tissue boxes, that kind of thing. And you see references to the stitching, to the embroidery in contemporary art as a symbol of Palestine. And I use it that way, very loosely. The dresses are about 12 feet high as they're hung. They could be taller or shorter, but they're installed to suit the space of the station. And they're really, when I first made them, I made them for a show, I think it was in 2000, at the El Wasiti Art Center in Sheikh Jarrah in Jerusalem. And the piece was really an offering to those people who had left Jerusalem by force and had died before they were able to return to Jerusalem. So I hung it as a place where they could go to dwell within Jerusalem. So it's been a memorial piece. It has a lot of different meanings, but it's also a tribute to the women of Palestine and to their strength, which I admire very much. I've been spending as much time as I can in the Middle East with my family and in Jerusalem, and so the work is changing, but still I'm fascinated with the women.
From garbage and recycling it. The two pieces which I share in that event in the station a museum, it's two things. One of them is box, and that box belonged to Israeli military before 48. And I found this box in Ramallah after my father died. So I found in a label in the shelf written that Jewish was coming to Palestinian cities like Haifa, Akka, Jaffa. I put my father's life inside the shelf when he's in his homeland, when they pushed him to move from his homeland, and when he became a refugee, when he lived in Jabalia camp, the place which I born in it, and when he's working in the camp, when I am with him, when he is sick, and when he died. Israelis confiscate that box before 2 years ago. 2.5 years ago, and they took the label, they are in the box, and I succeed to return it back after 6 months of negotiation.
The piece that I have in the show Made in Palestine is a cartridge box, an ammo box, with the stenciling that indicates the caliber of the ammunition. And I filled it with stones, and it symbolizes the total imbalance of this situation that's occurring right now. Absolute total imbalance. You see a nuclear capability against the stone. The piece is approximately 4 foot long, a couple of feet wide, and maybe 4.5 or so feet tall. And it's my way of expressing the situation.
Largest piece, they're all abstract, they're very bright colors. I'm very optimistic for our future, based basically on my optimism for an international future where we Palestinians can't win against US imperialism and Zionism combined. We're too small. But I think there are enough peoples all over the world that will eventually liberate the world. And so my optimism is reflected in color, in my history as an artist. I feel I'm international. I pay attention to art from all over the world. And I particularly am impressed by art that grew on the groundswell of optimism created by revolution, such as the constructivists and the suprematists and abstract expressionism, even in its space in the industrial union movement, and so on. And so I am very true to abstraction, but I do not believe in the historians or critics who believe abstraction is strictly a product of our mind. It is based on things we see. And so those three pieces at the station are based on my impressions from Palestine, but also on, you know, a lifetime of seeing, interpreting reality. I think abstraction is about the general principles of motion, light, place, etc. And the big piece I call Palestine, from the Mediterranean Sea to the Jordan River. And this title contains two things. It contains one of the chants we chant in our demonstrations against the fascism of Israel and for the liberation of Palestine, where we see from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. And also an expression of the fact that there is a historic Palestine, and that We love the land, we love the appearance of it, we love the seacoast, and so the painting covers an impression. On the right is the kind of vegetation that the warmer, more humid coast of the eastern Mediterranean would have, the kind of flowers, the trees, the greenery. And the central section is about the olive trees, the distribution of stones and so on, but in nighttime colors. And then the left section expresses the desert area moving towards the Jordan River. The other two, one I call the Mountain Olives of Palestine, and one that's about the Mountain Olives of Palestine reminds me of the tree trunks of the olive trees in Palestine, especially those ancient olive trees in the Garden of Gethsemane that are reputed to be 2,000 plus years old. And when you go see them, they are amazing because they've become hollow in the middle and they're just little.
But they're growing some little shoots and trees and branches.
But the trunks are amazing. Yeah. And I had an opportunity to go paint them. And so that experience is in the painting. And the experience for me is all Palestinian and has to do with my roots in Palestine. I went into paint, I saw too many tourists. So I thought, and they told me they're going to close for lunch. So I went and asked the priest, can I just stay for lunch? And, you know, from one thing to the other, they said, oh, first, can I go into the garden itself? Of course, no way. They're not going to let any human being into this garden. But, you know, there's a fence around it. Well, can I stay in this area during lunch? They said, lunch is 2 hours long. I said, perfect. So the priests went in to have their lunch, and I stayed out painting. And then slowly, they started trickling out. They're curious what I was doing, looking at my painting. What's your name? Da, 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 da. And then suddenly they said, oh, we have a Sophia Halabi painting of the same olive tree paint.
Yeah.
So I thought, this is an old aunt of mine. So I'm 66 and she's another generation or two older than I. I knew her before she passed away. So I went in to look and she had the same view I had of the olive tree.
It's amazing.
So I felt, I felt really good. I felt, here I am, these roots don't go away. I'm really deep in Palestine. And the third one is sort of about the sensations of Al-Quds, which is our name for Jerusalem in Arabic. And Al-Quds means the holy city. So that's the work I have in the show. And it's not just about Palestine, but it is very much about Palestine, especially the Palestine that I remember from my childhood and that I know from my family and from even now, from our relations to other families. In the opening yesterday, which was fantastic, I had all kinds of members of Jerusalem families come up and ask me.
The Halabi woman, yes.
Baramki, and who else was there? Just many. I can't
it's
remember.
It's a small
the
community
name.
In Palestine. A lot of people yeah. know other people.
Yeah.
And that was very nice about the exhibition yesterday. I met a lot of people from my hometown, from Ramallah. And they were all dressed in their Palestinian dresses or jackets that were beautifully embroidered.
Yeah, when the Israelis occupied Ramallah, they did a lot of destruction. And one of the things they focused on was cars.
Yeah, I mean, in my own neighborhood, I could see around 8 or 9 cars that have been completely crushed by tanks that ran over them. As I look from my bedroom window or from the balcony, I could see all these cars. And in my hometown, Ramallah, there were about 600 private cars that have been damaged. Also cars that belong to public services, such as ambulances, small trucks. And this was really quite, along with all the other destruction that happened, of roads being completely tracked with the tank tracks, fences broken down, houses, some rooms being pulled down. Anyway, there was a lot of destruction during the incursions, invasions of Ramallah. And I thought of doing an installation as a statement of that these cars that belong to private citizens are completely smashed. So these people, it was a vehicle that took people to their place of work, to school, to it's a commodity that people are attached to. And now these cars have become useless, although they are all very modern and new cars, the ones I chose at least. They look completely smashed and useless, but I put them on a road, in a play field. I paved a road, and I called the installation Going for a Ride, thinking with the idea that life goes on. But the road itself has no beginning and no end, like all the roads that are now being cut off for Palestinians to commute on in the West Bank, in Palestine, in occupied Palestine.
So it became a metaphor for all the closure points, yes, in a exactly. way, and the destruction yeah. of our yeah. Communications and, yeah. Yeah. and transportation.
Yeah. And I chose the location also. It is a place where behind it, on a mountaintop, there's a settlement called Psagot, and it overlooks the playground where the installation was. And I wanted that particular spot because when the curfews were lifted and people could go out on the streets, there were still some cars that could ride. And there was a statement in an Israeli newspaper by a settler saying, "Where have all these cars come from? We thought we had damaged them all."
Yes.
So I wanted it as a statement.
I saw the installation myself in Ramallah. There were radios installed in the damaged cars, so you heard signs of life and movement. And then there were like squashed cars on the road, three or four of them.
Yeah.
And you painted them all one color.
No, this was the other installation. These were okay. all, they stayed, I polished them. I just gave them a good
polish, okay.
polish cleaning.
Okay.
And I put inside some talismans, some amulets that normally Palestinians put hang in their cars to protect them from
evil.
This was greater evil that didn't protect them. You know?
But I remember seeing what looked like the chain marks of tanks.
Of the tank yeah. tracks. Yeah. I did that also, simulated tank yeah. tracks. Yeah.
As though the tank came and crushed all the cars yeah. and left.
On the opening night of the Made in Palestine exhibit, the spirit of these great people was manifested in a special way.
The other point in moment was also towards the end of the night, and it was a very moving experience for me, and it was throughout the evening, there was a couple of musicians that kept playing Arabic music, one on oud and the other on the tabla, the drum, and then occasionally this gentleman came out on the Arabic reed flute. And then late in the evening, this is after so-called, supposedly 10 o'clock closing of the show, people started dancing to the music, Arabic dancing to the music, and there was a debka that was being done, which is a traditional Arabic dance that people go in a circle with. And it was being done in front of my drawing, and I was... This drawing that represents the sorrow and the indignity of displacement, the suffering, the nekba of the Palestinians, the tragedy of the Palestinians. And there was this huge image on the wall of suffering, and in front of it, there were these flesh and blood folks, Palestinians and non-Palestinians, dancing. So it was this combination of the strength, the flexibility, the joy, the commitment to life that Palestinians have, contrasted against their history of suffering, all brought together in this 45-minute of dancing and just sort of really kind of honest, emotional insistence on their heritage, on their culture. And it was really, I just stood there and just was sort of awed and moved by this scene.
Yet the thing that perhaps faces down the exhibition the most is the Houston and American press bias against the show, whose lack of coverage by the print and TV media almost reaches disdain in its neglect. It is their shameful condition which we have come to expect. Even still, the Palestinian spirit proudly survives in its art at the Art Car Museum Station, Alabama and La Branch. بعز الشتا والساعة قاعدين بالصف والشبابيك زي الأرض فوارس ولا المعلمين اللي فيها حرام بيشافقوا مع إن بعض كل اللي بقلبين بس بين كل مد ومدي بعضه مع إنه مش بإيدين علشان القبضة بتهمين ولا الشباب اللي زينا لما يطلعوا يسهروا دايما بتطلعوا عليه بنظرة تاني زي اللي عاكين من عالم تاني بيحرجونا بيزلونا بيفرجونا
Well, you know, if the American people really knew what was going on, they would understand our cause. ولما تروح تدور على شغل عشان تعيش بيضحوك برفضوك وبقولوا لك انك مش مناسب كل هذا عشان ايش
America is big, it has all kinds of people, and there are many, many people who are very supportive of Palestine, but they don't have a power. They don't have power, they don't have a voice. It's very hard for them to speak. Anyone who speaks up for us is labeled immediately anti-Semitic. إننا أحسن منهم بدل ما يكون عندنا مدارس ومراكز جماهيرية وتربوية
عم بيعذبوا فينا بدل ما يعمروا شوارع Our situation is it's crazy and unbelievable. Sometimes I feel surprised from myself that I can make art in that situation. Life is so hard and people cannot move from city to another. Different times I feel that I am very close to death. Many times soldiers, Israeli soldiers, shooting my house. Sometimes they try to shoot my car. Yani, it's not. It's a crazy life. And also how to move.
I think this is a really important show, and just in terms of how the show was put together, the curators traveling to the Middle East and curating this on site and seeing the conditions that the artists are working in is going to allow them to put together a catalog for the exhibit that will really be a meaningful document of what's going on right now.
Villages are on the verge of being wiped out. There's a few that have been literally bulldozed down to the ground, small villages, where villages are being cut up by the security line, where villages are being cut up by roads that are exclusively for the Israeli settlers, where thousand-year-old olive trees, in most cases hundreds, but there's a few thousand-year-old olive trees that have been both the symbolic and the economic core, the roots of the Palestinians that are being bulldozed literally by the thousand.
If there's anything in a painting that refers to the Palestinian flag, possibly, and the military, as they go through house to house, they get arrested, the work is destroyed. And we heard this story over and over again. It's shocking. Any reference. Art is a means of more peaceful change. I believe that. We don't see much evidence that the authorities feel that way. And as far as publicity goes, we made a major effort to contact everybody. We produced the first show. The first time it's been done, not only in the country, but in the Western European world.
The Palestinian art show.
Yeah, it's the first full Palestinian art. And we got no attention. We got no critics. No one came.
This was written and produced by Michael Woodson. Art direction and technical direction by Kevin White. Made in Palestine was produced at Pacifica KPFT Radio, Houston.
الله شمان يمين لورا ودا قدام.